Hi, you're listening to Trial and Error, a new podcast from John Leggett College Law Department for the week ending Friday, November the 4th, 2005. This is the first proper podcast that we've tried to put together. You might be asking yourselves at this stage, what is a podcast? Well, basically, it's an internet radio show that's available as an MP3 file that you can download and listen to either on an MP3 player or just through the college network using the computers and the Windows Media Player on them. We're not sure how frequently we're going to get to produce these particular items, but we've worked hard this week to make sure that our first podcast is available. I've managed to rope in a number of people to help me in this. We've got a mixture of staff, students, and visiting speakers in this show. Two of our AS level students, Tom and Andrew, will be presenting you two separate sections. One is a look at some rather bizarre laws from across the globe, and the other is a review of a new magazine from Philip Allen Publications called the A-Level Law Review. We're going to have an interview with two of our visiting speakers who came to talk to the Law Society this week, who work with the Probation Service. We'll have a feature on the Law Society itself. They recently visited London during the October half term, and they're going to tell us about that and a little bit about the work they do apart from that. We have a review of some new audio lectures that are available for revision purposes commercially from Consilio, who produced the Law in a Box CD-ROMs. And finally, we're going to have some top tips for your revision if you're an AS level student concerning the exam in January that you'll be sitting, Sources of Law. Leon will be presenting that, so you should be in for a treat. First up then, it's Tom and Andrew. Let's have a listen to them talking about some of the wacky laws that they've come across from across the globe.
Hi, I'm Tom Howe.
And I'm Andrew Martin.
And we're both studying AS Law at John Leggett College.
In class we came across some ridiculous laws from all around the UK. For example, all boys over the age of 14 must do 2 hours of longbow practice a week under the supervision of clergymen.
And it's illegal for any woman to eat chocolate on any public transport.
So after class we decided to go research some laws and see if there was any ridiculous laws around the world as ridiculous as ours.
We found absolutely loads really, and we've grouped them into a couple of little groups, cars, bars and general other stuff really. We're going to start with cars, and Andy's got one from the Philippines.
Yeah, in the Philippines, cars whose license plates end with a 1 or a 2 are not allowed on the roads on Monday, same with 3 and 4 on Tuesday, 5 and 6 on Wednesday, 7 and 8 on Thursday, 9 and 0 on Friday, and that's between the hours of 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Why do you reckon that is then, Andy?
I suppose it's cut down on congestion, I suppose.
Better than paying congestion charges like in London.
I suppose, yeah, probably better.
There's one in Texas. It's illegal to drive your car without windshield wipers, even if you don't have a windshield.
And in Switzerland, if you forget your keys inside your car and leave the car open, you'll be punished by losing your car.
Possibly the most stupid is from Florida. If an elephant is left tied to a parking meter, the parking fee has to be paid just as if it was a vehicle.
Suppose we've got even more stupid ones than that in the bar section.
In the bar section, we've got one from Nebraska first.
It is illegal for bar owners to sell beer unless they are simultaneously brewing a kettle of soup.
And in Texas, it's illegal to take more than 3 sips of beer at a time while standing up. The last group is just full of lots of really random laws from all over the world, really. One from Texas. A recently passed anti-crime law requires criminals to give their victims 24-hour notice, either orally or in writing, to explain the nature of the crime to be committed.
And in Australia, it is illegal to wear pink hot pants after midday on Sunday.
In Alabama, it's illegal to wear a fake mustache that could cause laughter in church.
It is illegal to rob a bank and then shoot the bank teller with a water pistol in Louisiana.
And finally, the penalty for jumping off a building in New York is death.
Right, the reason for most of the ridiculous laws in Great Britain are because they're not being repealed and they just keep building and building up.
But there's not really a good excuse for these silly ones from all around the world. We have actually got lots more to bring to you in the next podcast, but Until then, thanks for listening.
Thanks for that, gents. We're going to move swiftly on now to our visiting speakers. I won't worry about introducing them because they'll introduce themselves to you any second now.
Yep, my name's Kirsty Corkill and I'm a senior probation officer in Scunthorpe.
My name's Erica Permain. I am a Skills for Life coordinator for the probation service in Scunthorpe.
Thanks very much. Can you tell the students precisely what you think your job entails, if we start with that?
Right, yeah. My job is I manage two teams in Scunthorpe. The first one supervises all drug using offenders, so it supervises offenders on drug treatment and testing orders. And the second team I manage is called the Prolific Offenders Unit, so that deals with prolific and persistent offenders in Scunthorpe.
Thanks very much.
My job as part of Skills for Life is coordinating the programme, which is based around basic skills literacy and numeracy for those who don't get to go to college or maybe don't complete college. So the court orders come through from court and we signpost and instruct offenders to Skills for Life programmes at the probation service or in the community and manage the providers who deliver that to our clients.
Thanks very much. How long have you both been doing your jobs?
I started in the probation service in 1998, the first 2 years of which I was training. Mm-hmm. So I actually qualified in 2000.
I started working for the probation service in 2003 and have worked in a couple of different areas and I've been doing my current job for just 2 years.
Okay, and how did you come to choose to work with the probation service?
I left university with a degree and like a lot of graduates realised that it didn't necessarily qualify me to do anything specific. So after 5 years of doing various other jobs, the probation service offered me an opportunity to do another degree with a diploma, which gave me a professional qualification. So I kind of went to the probation service really as a means to get a professional qualification whilst being paid.
Excellent.
I started working for the probation service while I was working for a teaching company, teaching to the offenders, and I originally, after leaving college and university, wanted to be a teacher of adult education. And then from the work that I did with those offenders, actually delivering it to them, the actual Skills for Life, I saw sort of the other ends of the probation spectrum and really enjoyed that and thought that I would actually like to work for the service and work within the criminal justice service at some area. And when a post came available, I moved over into probation. And I've been there ever since.
Excellent. What do you enjoy most about your jobs?
It's varied. I think most people who work in probation will realise that you don't have a lot of time to plan things. Things change. Diaries are laid out months and months in advance, but you walk in the morning and a serious incident, a serious offence has occurred and everything kind of changes. So it's just that variety, really. You can't really plan. We work with some really nice offenders, but equally we work with some really dangerous offenders.
Yeah.
And it's kind of that unpredictability, I think, for me.
Yeah, I think some people thrive on how chaotic it can be, and you have to want to do a job like that. It is very interesting, it changes on a daily basis, there's nothing mundane about working probation service on any level. I also think that there's a great deal of satisfaction to be had out of the work you do in protecting the public. But in also some of the closer work you do with those offenders, they, you know, we call them offenders, but they are just people. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to see just some of the small differences you can make to a person's life can seem to keep you going amongst this chaotic day-to-day business.
And if any of our students were thinking of pursuing a career in your area, would you recommend it?
Absolutely. So many opportunities now, and the probation service has a lot of well-paid, good jobs that you don't need specific qualifications for. So I'd just say to anybody who's interested to get in touch, to do some voluntary work, and there's lots of opportunities around.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I would very much reinforce that. It's a good area to go to. You can have all sorts of areas to go into, from management roles or professional roles, and there's still many unprofessional roles where you can go on from university without taking any more qualifications, and they're all as worthwhile as each other. It's a good job to go to. Mm.
Well, we'd like to say special thanks to Kirsty and Erica for coming in to talk to the students. I know they got a great deal out of the talk that took place at lunchtime on Tuesday. Now we're going to turn things over to the Law Society themselves and hear from the Executive Committee about the work they do and their trip to London over the half term.
Hi, I'm Jonathan. I'm President of the Law Society.
Hi, I'm Rachel. I'm Vice President of the Law Society.
Hi, I'm Becky. I'm Secretary of the Law Society.
Hi, I'm Dale. I'm a member of the Law Society.
The Law Society is a group of students at college who all have a keen interest in law. We meet every week or every other week to debate legal issues or have a guest speaker in, such as Simon Davies, a local solicitor, and also probation services. As well as this, we also run trips and have events such as an annual dinner.
We've recently run a trip to London, which was 2 days long during the October half term. We took 24 students up to London on the train and stayed in a local hotel in Paddington. We did like a number of activities throughout the 2 days which were law related and some weren't, because it was half term, so you've got to give the students a bit of leeway. The trip went really well. Everyone who went enjoyed it, and people like made new friendships and whatnot.
Yeah, one of the events that we did do was a trip round the Old Bailey. We went in to see a couple of cases. There was two groups. One went to the morning sitting and one to the afternoon sitting. In the afternoon sitting, I think people found that more interesting. It was a murder trial, and a lot of the second years could actually, they found it, well, brilliant how they could read what was going on in the course. Like, they knew that they were trying to establish things like causation and that they were trying to show medical negligence, which some of the first years didn't understand, but they could follow it through. I think Jonathan went to the first sitting. So.
Yeah, we saw a terrorism case, which, although it was probably less exciting than the murder one, it gave everyone like a valuable insight into how the court works and what goes on. And it also left people under no sort of false pretences about what court's like. So it helped everyone involved. I mean, Dale, did you enjoy your court?
Yeah, I'm not actually a law student, but I enjoyed going around the courts. Some of the terms were a bit confusing, but it made sense in the end when I could get outside and ask the second years what things meant.
While we were in London, we also went around the Houses of Parliament, and this gave us a great insight into what went on, because we got a tour by an MP. Also, we got to see like where legislation is created. We got to go into the House of Lords, House of Commons, see where Tony Blair would stand and deliver speeches and whatnot. So we got a good insight into that, which we normally the public can't see.
Yeah, like Becky said, I mean, because it was during half term, we did let the students go off and do a bit of what they wanted to do. Plus, the courts aren't open all the time, so a lot of them went shopping down Oxford Street. I mean, me and a group of other students, we decided to go see Fame in the theatre, which was absolutely fantastic. It was a real good experience, and I think Dale, you went out for a meal and that, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. Very nice.
At the start of the trip, everyone was sort of a little bit hesitant around each other, but by the end of the trip, everyone had made new friends. They like managed to get on with each other well. We had no incidences. It was a trip that was enjoyed by everyone.
Yeah, we took Colin Taylor with us as well. I mean, I was the only person who actually knew who Colin was, but by end of trip, everyone seemed like quite comfortable talking to him, and
yeah. He
seemed to enjoy it as well. And he did actually study law, so for him, he could relate to it.
Yeah, we went on the trip last year. We think it was more successful this year because there's like more people and that, but
and
that's what
we
gave us the idea. Yeah, we were running it, so so we're hoping to make it an annual event and to inspire people to take over running it when we finish.
Yeah.
From the aspect of the guest speakers what come in, that's like really valuable for the students, because if they're not quite sure what they want to do within law, it can like help them to decide if they think, oh, I like what probation said. They might swing more towards that than if they're a bit unsure.
And the same with senior case, if they're thinking about being a solicitor, they can go in and see what the sort of work they'd have to do, and this can allow them to make a real decision.
Also, being a member and being part of the committee, it would be good on you, because for going to university, people like that, don't they?
Yeah, it's showing dedication to the subject itself. Mm.
So basically, we think that if you are interested in law, any aspect, or just want to learn more about the law in general, like Dale, joining the Law Society is a very good thing to do. There's lots of aspects that you can enjoy and learn from.
That's a lot of social events, isn't there? So you can meet people and talk to them.
The Law Dinner.
Yeah.
Tell us about the Law Dinner.
The Law Dinner is an event in May where we invite lots of guest speakers, solicitors, barristers. That's our thing, to go to Forest Pines Restaurant. Everyone gets dressed up in dresses, our suits, and we have a really nice dinner and mingle with the sisters, I believe.
Yeah. And charity raffles as well. Yeah. Good chance to get some work experience if you, I don't know, talk nicely to some of the barristers on your table.
Didn't you get some work experience?
Yes, I did get some work experience.
Where was that?
Parkcourt Chambers in Leeds, and it was brilliant. It was like one of my favourite weeks out of the whole holidays. So I learnt a lot from there. I think you went to a work experience as well.
Yeah, I went to one at Sovereign Chambers in Leeds, and so I got to spend time with a barrister, and that's really helpful. It's really set my mind on like an aspiration as a job.
Another thing with a law society, what we're going to start doing is some revision sessions for the first year students and second year students. I mean, from like, we're second year, so we know what the exams were like. We can try and help them if they're a bit unsure about a topic, or if they don't like know what something means, we might know.
Or even how to revise.
Yeah, how to revise. And
what methods we used, how they helped us.
When to start, not leaving it too late.
There's nothing like there's nothing bad said about the Law Society.
Yeah, you can't lose out really by going.
Come join.
Hi, I'm Tom Howe.
And I'm Andrew Martin.
And we're both AS level students studying law at John Leggett. We come today to do a quick review on a new magazine that's been brought out by Philip Allen Publishers called AS Level Law Review, and it's just a magazine to help us, really.
I read over the October half term audit, and I think it's a really good read.
What's this magazine got in it then, Andrew?
Well, it's for both AS and A level students, and it has different features in each issue, and this issue was about the judiciary, civil procedure, police powers and criminal liability.
So who writes all these articles?
Well, head of examiners at AQA and OCR, and also heads of law departments around the in different colleges around the country.
So is their writing quite technical and hard to understand?
Most of it's written in just normal English, and whatever technical bits there are, it's described fully for you to understand.
So it's pretty useful.
It is, yeah.
Does it have any information on like revising or help tips or anything?
Well, it has help sections in it, as well as having websites that have recent reports from cases around the UK. It has quizzes just to test your like general law knowledge, as well as test questions to practice with.
And does it give you information about taking law a bit further, like to university?
Well, there, in this issue, there is actually a feature from a previous A-level law student who's gone to Warwick University and studied law, and it has she tells of information about how she got there and what test you would have to take to get there.
And how many issues are there of this magazine each year?
Well, there's three issues each year in each volume, and you've got one in September, which is the one we're reviewing. There's one in January, and there's one in April.
And how much do these cost?
Well, for the volume with three issues, it's $9.95 if you buy it through college, and it's $19.95 if you buy it elsewhere.
And are there any other revision guides or books by Philip Allen Publishers that you could use to help?
Well, actually, in the magazine itself, there is leaflets which say where to how to order things, as well as you get a £10 book voucher for ordering.
So overall, it's really helpful. Do you think it'd be as helpful for A2 level students as AS level students?
Well, if it's as useful as it is to us, then for them it would be definitely good.
So it's definitely worth getting then?
Definitely worth getting, even though it's quite a steep price.
Okay, thanks for listening, and talk to you next time.
The law and the law one. Hi, my name's Leon Riley, and I'm here today to talk to you about my top tips to be successful for the 2570 paper. That to you is the Sources of Law paper, which you will sit in January. Now, the reason why I'm talking about it is because I've had a lot of involvement at exam board level in this paper, so I know exactly what's required, question by question, to make you successful. The 2570 paper is a sources-based paper. So what you've got as a student is a choice between two sources. And normally they are discrete topic areas. So for example, it could be precedent and Europe, or it could be statutory interpretation and legislation. Sometimes Denise, the lovely lady who writes these exam papers, uses a split, but this is quite rare. Now, what does it take to be successful at these? The first thing you have to do is look at both sources. All questions are not created equally. Some of them are more challenging than others. What I mean by that is, what is required of you as a candidate answering those questions can vary dependent on the question. Now, the topics which are on this paper have a very even cycle in that it is easy to look at the past records and sit or judge what kind of topics come up. Now, the three hot topics for you in January are precedent, Europe, and statutory interpretation. And when I talk through the questions of A, B, and C in terms of what you have to do, I will focus particularly on those questions. Remember, they are only hot topics, and this is not a guarantee that those topics will be on the paper. As a minimum, you have to revise all topics apart from one. The reason for that is if you leave one topic out, you'll be guaranteed another question or another source. Now, if we look at the styles of questions, obviously it's a 60 mark paper and the questions are 15, 15, 30. And each of them have got their own unique characteristics in terms of how to be successful. First of all, read both sources, analyse the information in the sources, select your question, and then get down to your question A. Question A is a 15 mark question. Now, it's normally perceived as a mark a minute. Now, these style of questions would basically have 15 minutes of writing. And obviously that length of a paper is going to vary depending on the student's size of handwriting. But remember, inbuilt in that 15 minutes is some planning time. So realistically, once you've jotted down a little plan to your A, you are only going to be talking about writing continuously for 12 minutes. Now, A-style questions. A-style questions tend to focus on specific narrow areas. So if we look at one of the hot topics, which is precedent, a narrow area would be distinguishing. So you'd be asked, critically assess how the courts have distinguished cases, 15 marks. And then what you'd have to do for that is that you'd have to write for 12 minutes. And obviously you're going to focus on a definition of distinguishing. You would focus on, say for example, some cases which illustrate that. And obviously you're going to have to use as a minimum at least two cases to illustrate that. And also think about the merits and defects of the use of distinguishing. And that should be enough to get you through to 15 marks. Now, that is not a lot of information to absorb, but you have to be careful because a lot of this information tends to come on narrow areas, e.g. 15 marks if it's a statutory interpretation question on a purposive approach question. Do you have two cases? Do you know its merits and defects? Do you know and can you explain the context of the rule? That's why you have to be very careful with the 15 mark questions. It is common for students to walk out of the exam and think, what an easy question, if only I knew a bit more information on that. So that's important when you're revising to look at your key terms, to look at issues which are definitions, and to look at like single topic areas like literal rule, golden rule, intrinsic aids, extrinsic aids. All of these type of questions have traditionally been asked as 15 marks. If we look at the B style questions are normally split up into three parts and they're given 5 marks each. They are mini scenarios. So it could be, for example, if it's a precedent style question, a case has come before the House of Lords in 2005. The previous case was decided by the House of Lords in 1956. Explain what you could do. And what you obviously have to do for that is talk about whether the present House of Lords can move away from those past decisions. Now, in precedent style questions, you have to know the court structure and who binds whom. In other words, what's the powers of other individual courts in relation to other courts? And that is a very common B-style question in that area. If you look at something like statutory interpretation, the common question in that area is to compare the different rules. So you'd say, if the literal rule was used, then X would occur. However, this may lead to an absurdity, so it would be better for them to use a golden rule. In the statutory interpretation questions, it's very important that you do a comparison. You compare one rule against another to score the 5 marks. In European-style questions, they tend to focus on horizontal and vertical direct effect or need accurate use of the source. So you use the source material and then apply it. The B-style questions are the ones which you should practice on at home, because practice makes perfect in this area. Once you get into the routine and the style of each individual paper, then you'll find them very easy to score 15 marks. Now, if you look at the C-style question is like a mini essay. Again, it would take 30, it has 30 marks, so it will take you 30 minutes to write. So you're talking about writing at length for a considerable area. So, for example, it could be critically assess how the House of Lords have used the practice statement. It could be critically assess the difference between the literal and the purposive approach. They're common 30 mark questions, and therefore your level and depth of knowledge in those areas has to be in detail. So you're going to have to know a number of cases. So if we go back to the practice statement question, which I mentioned about the House of Lords, how many physical cases do you going to have to need to know? Well, you're going to have to know, for example, the London Tramways case. Then you're going to have to know Conway and Rimmer, Harrington British Railways Board. You're also going to have to look at, say, for example, another civil example, another criminal example, and look at cases which has caused them problems, which is nuller. And you're going to have to explain not only the case, you can't just mention the case. What you're going to have to do is explain the significance of the case in terms of using the practice statement. You know, was it a major use, a minor use? Did it have a big effect on the law? Were they reluctant to use it in those cases? And on top of that, these C-style questions require you to have AO2 knowledge, which means you have to focus more on evaluative comments. So, you know, if we're talking about a statutory interpretation question like the literal versus the purposive one, then what you're going to have to focus on, you know, what is good about the literal rule? What's bad about it? What's good about the purposive approach? What's bad about it? In other words, you need to give yourself a balanced, rounded argument. Now, remember what I said at the start. When you open the sources paper, it is important you read both sources. Read carefully the questions. You choose the source which is best for you, the one that you think you're going to access it on. Traditionally, it is more difficult to score high marks on precedent questions and statutory interpretation questions. That's because 85% plus of the entire candidate cohort, and that is not just JLC, that's every single college in the country, will do precedent or statutory interpretation questions. So what they're expecting of you is a high level of knowledge, because if you're going to be an A grade, they therefore want you to demonstrate a good breadth of knowledge, whereby other questions like Europe, candidates who tend to do them are either very good candidates or very weak candidates, and therefore the range of answers available to the exam market is more limited. So if you look at questions like delegated legislation and legislation, they traditionally have been areas in which our students in the past have been able to score high marks. Not only because they're traditionally not as selected by students, but also because if you think of the cases in there, there's hardly any cases in those topic areas. Where if you look at something like precedence and statutory interpretation, there are a lot of cases. Now, if you follow these top tips, you should become outstanding on this paper. Remember, practice makes perfect. It is a skills-based paper. Use the information in the source and think carefully about the question which you choose. Good luck for January. Ciao.
Hey, now, to talk a little bit about a new series of resources that are available for students studying law. They're not really aimed at A-level or AS-level law students, but they might provide some sort of insight or interest for students who are aiming to the higher level in terms of the grades and the university aspirations that they have. They're published by a company called Consilio. The website that you would be able to find them at is http://www.spr-consilio.com. They're called Law in a Box. Each box is a separate CD-ROM supported by online materials available once you've actually registered your disc. They cover a whole range of the core subjects that you might study as part of an LLB, and in particular, of interest to our students at John Leggett, there is an edition which deals solely with criminal law and another one which deals solely with the law of torts. So the second year options for A2 students at John Leggett are both covered extensively by these discs. They are very expensive, they run at over £28 a piece. I've looked at one or two of them and I've had a listen to what they have to say, and I must be honest, I don't think they're particularly good value for our students. The audio lectures tend to be a little bit boring and students can't concentrate for long enough periods of time to really benefit from the depth of analysis that's being provided in each lecture. So the combination of the expense and the intricate nature and the complicated nature of what we're dealing with here tend to suggest to me that we really ought not consider buying them in for the college. If somebody has a generous aunt or uncle who'd love to buy them for them, then I'm sure that it won't hurt if you've got the sticking power to sit down and listen to these things. It certainly will give you an insight that perhaps others around you may lack. Well, that's just about it now from this edition of Trial and Error, the John Leggett College podcast for students of A and AS level law. I hope you've enjoyed listening to what we've had to say. If you'd like to take part in future podcasts, then just let us know. Contact your teacher and tell them that you'd like to take part, and if you have any ideas for things that could be included, let us know. Next time, we hope to be concentrating on applications for law at higher education. We'll be interviewing a couple of students about the LNAT test, which they've sat recently, and we'll be talking to the head of careers at John Leggett, Ray Perry, about making applications for law. In addition to that, we hope to bring you some top tips for revision for the A2 examination being sat in January, and some further stories of interest and some updates and roundups of the news as it happens. Thanks again for listening to Trial and Error.